Welcome to the Spitball Sessions. Here we talk about game mechanics, the games we want to see, how to make them, and the games that come close, and how to fix them. We might even talk about the games we love along the way. We have two wonderful hosts, Josh Noyes and Luke Boulay. After the first part's done, we go on to the mouthwash, where we go off the cuff and talk about some random stuff. The topic of this week...
Perfect Cherry Blossom.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Spitball Sessions, the roguelike of podcasts. I'm Luke Boulay, and I will be your host for this session. I'm joined by our resident editor and wrestling fanatic, Josh Noyes. How are things going today?
I just want to say that I am the best in the world at what I do. And what I do is making podcasts and writing reviews. I'm the best in the world at writing reviews and making podcasts.
That's wonderful. Remind me to put some comments in on your last edited review.
You already did.
We have some words, things. Okay, that's wonderful. As an explanation of what we're trying to achieve here, this podcast exists as a means to examine games and discuss their nuances. Mostly it devolves into nonsense and segues into nonsense. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Segues into nonsense and segues into nonsense. I like that. We should keep that.
So, anyway, today we're going to be talking about, as it is the beginning of Shmup Appreciation Month, something that Josh actually started last year.
No. I feel I should clarify that. I started, it is the first day of Perfect Charity Blossom. Shmup Appreciation was actually started by the Drunken Gamers podcast.
Oh, yes, I am wrong. Forgive me.
If you'll let me still hijack your segment for just a quick second, I'm going to just mention what that is. So Shmup Appreciation was created by the Drunken Gamers, which was John Moe and Hilden. They used to put out a podcast where they played video games, and they were big fans of shmups. Aaron Hilden passed away a few years ago. It was very sudden, very sad. So I've sort of carried on Perfect Charity Blossom growing out of Shmup Appreciation, partially in memory of him, partially in appreciation for his love of shmups, and partially out of a desire to, I like to think of it as sort of the 5K to Extra Life's marathon.
Sounds wonderful.
And we'll get more into that in later.
Yeah, so... podcast jacking aside, we are going to pitch out a sequel today,
yes,
which is something a little bit different. So last year, as part of the Perfect Charity Blossom, I participated by trying to play through Jamestown. And funnily enough, even though I didn't expect to, I was completely surprised by this, I actually completed the game on the insane difficulty.
Yes.
Which is very hard, which means like you have to play through each level like 4 times because of the way that they set it up. However,
You can start it at the insane difficulty if you want to.
You have to like beat the previous level at the higher difficulty to unlock the next difficulty.
Yeah.
It's complicated, but it was fun, and I actually beat the main boss, which was fantastic. So I actually enjoyed it a great deal, far more than I thought I would, because I really didn't get into shmups myself.
I know, I've been telling you for years that you would like shmups, and you're like, no.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm stupid like that.
And then I finally managed to get you into Toho as well, but we will again talk about that a little later.
Yeah, we're going to be doing a lot more involving Toho, and I'm still trying to decide if I'm going to do just Toho or if I'm going to try picking up Ikaruga and trying that this year.
Oh boy.
Yes. Anyway, that's going to be rather interesting.
That's a spicy meatball.
Yeah, you'll be able to enjoy whatever we do this month, March. For the entirety of it, as Josh here will be streaming on Twitch. Will you be doing every single day again like you did last month?
I am currently planning on it. We will see how life goes, but I'm hoping that, assuming my schedule is nothing immediate or no emergencies come up, and that is my plan. And at the moment, we haven't finalized the...
Schedule.
What?
Schedule.
No, the schedule is I'm working on, but I was going to say, I'm still working on the exact address, but I believe it will be neoncheetahs.com/PCB if you want to participate or donate.
Yeah, and so we'll have that set up and working if we don't have it up by now. We're recording this before March, so we might be using past tense here and there, but we will be in the throes of March when this podcast comes live.
We're recording a couple days
if
early.
You're hearing this live, well, not live, but if you're hearing this for the first time and it's still March, hop on to neoncheetahs.com/PCB and check it out.
Yes.
Okay, so... as I was saying, so Josh, you're going to do your best to do every single day as part of that to raise money for...
Child's Play.
Child's Play, which is a great cause.
And again, totally... we can talk about a little bit more about this later in mouthwash.
And I will be doing the same. I won't be doing it every day, but I will be doing as much as I can. Last year I did play a lot of Jamestown. I played through the entire thing, and I enjoyed it a great deal. I thought that the gameplay was good. It had really good controls, nice mechanics, good challenge, and it had an interesting story.
I'm curious actually, because I'm going to admit this now. I don't like Jamestown as much as you do. What did you play it on?
What do you mean? With? Well, you know what I played it with. I came over to your house and played it with that. I used the Steam
controller. Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if you played with that or the mouse. Because I will say, the mouse controls in that game are bad, and the keyboard controls are not great.
No.
So I feel like the keyboard controls aren't quite loose enough, and the mouse is way too loose.
I'll tell you this.
So maybe I'll try it with the Steam controller.
And like, part of the thing might be because I don't have that much experience with bullet hells, so I, like... Going into that, I was just kind of like, this is the way it is.
Did we mention what a bullet hell or a shmup is, by the way?
No. Do we need to?
We might want to.
Okay, well.
So I'll do the quick recap. So anybody who has played old arcade games will probably recognize these kinds of games. They originally grew out of Space Invaders and Galaga and Galaxia. And they're the games where you have a little ship or a little character at the bottom of the screen and you are walking upwards. Or for some games, at the left side of the screen, and you're going rightwards. And there's lots of little obstacles on the screen. And mostly you're trying to avoid things, and also you're kind of trying to shoot the aliens or the bad guys or the whatever it may be. So they're called shmups from shoot 'em up, because you're shooting upwards originally. And so they're very complicated, they're very complex. I like to describe it as basically trying to run through a rainstorm without getting wet.
Which is a very apt description.
Yeah, or run through a blizzard without getting snow on you, for those of you who live up north. Because basically you are dealing with large quantities of things on the screen, all of which can kill you, typically in one hit, though various games handle it slightly differently.
Yeah.
And your goal is less to hit things and more to avoid being hit. Usually you have a very, very small thing. Part of your ship is actually the part that can take damage. And so there's a lot of dexterity, there's a lot of pattern recognition.
Yeah, it does require dexterity, and reflexes are very important, but also memorization and planning is kind of important to actually progress in the game.
So people who like, say, the old school Mega Mans or the old school games like that probably would find a lot to enjoy in branching out into something like a shmup or a bullet hell.
Yeah, yeah. If you're into those types of games, I definitely recommend this title.
And they're also fairly cheap, and it shows up in Humble Bundles fairly regularly if that's something you are into.
Yeah, there's a lot of games that would classify. I would actually hop onto Steam and just look at what shows up when you
look
do
at bullet hells.
Bullet hells or shmups. Those are the two ones that you want to. Shmup is kind of like the general thing, and bullet hell is kind of a finer niche of shmups because generally speaking they're harder.
Yeah.
And
again, we'll get more into that a little bit later. But for now, we're mainly focusing on Jamestown because you really like Jamestown.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a great deal, and it might have just been because it was my first experience with the shmup / bullet hell genre.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And it might also have just been because the particular theming of it was particular. Particular theming is particularly nice to me.
Yeah, I was gonna say you're a real big fan of steampunk, and you kind of like Mars. So
yeah, I love Mars, and I still haven't reached Dune yet, which is kind of weird. So yeah, that's
that's a tangent that nobody's gonna follow.
Dune is the Kerbal Space Program. If you don't know what that is, you really should watch some of my Kerbal Space Program streams.
Yes, absolutely, those are fun to watch.
So yeah, so a lot of that game is, like, really good on its own. I wouldn't say that the game itself needs improvement, but I do think it's a game that could really use a sequel.
I actually do think the game could use a little bit of improvement, and
but we can improve it in the sequel.
Sure, but I'm just going to say, I actually already mentioned it, I think the mechanics could use tightening up, and that has kind of always been my problem with that game. But in the sequel. I mean, obviously that game is done. It's not going to be patched at this point. So if they make a sequel to it, I think... Because I will say, for me, and I think for a lot of shmup players, the thing about shmups is tightness of control. You want it to feel... You know, we talked a couple weeks ago about difficulty. It's a very similar thing. And in fact, in one of my episodes last year of Perfect Charity Blossom, I talked a lot about the differences between games like Touhou and games like Dark Souls and other sort of difficult games as far as, you know, intentionality of play and intentionality of failure. And you never want a bullet hell to feel like, oh, I was trying to go left and I didn't go left far enough. If I tap the left arrow key or the left joystick three times, I want to know exactly where I'm going to be at the end of those three taps.
Like, right.
I don't want to be a quarter of an inch to the left. I don't want to be a quarter of an inch to the right. I want to be exactly where I intended to end up. Yeah. And that's really hard. Like,
it's something that often requires a great deal of refinement.
Yes.
Because, like I said, one of the big components about a shmup, and especially a bullet hell, is precision. Because, as Josh mentioned in the thing, and this is kind of crucial, there's usually one, maybe four pixels that are your hitbox in the game. Which means that bullets can pass through the graphic of your character without hurting you.
Right. And in fact, in many games, that's actually how you score.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I mean, it's called grazing, I think, in Touhou. And that is crucial to be precise, because if you don't have, you know, pixel-perfect control of your character in a game that requires pixel-perfect precision, that's a lot of P's, there's a problem. Oh, yes. Another P! Look at that!
Well, and for those of you who don't play a lot of shmups, I'll try to compare it to two fairly popular semi-indie games, which is, think about the difference in control between Super Meat Boy and, say, Little Big Planet or Braid.
Oh.
Where in Super Meat Boy, you feel like every single thing you do, every time you press the button, you're going exactly where you think you are. And in Little Big Planet and Braid, you're a little floaty, which, I mean, Braid's not a tight precision game. Doesn't need that.
Braid's, the way the Braid is presented, the whole timeline shifting thing is a major component. So imprecision kind of lends itself to that.
Yeah, I mean, it is primarily a puzzle game. It is a puzzle game that happens to have platforming
but
in it.
The looser control system you need that attached to Super Meat Boy would be a huge mess.
Right, and so in shmups, it's very similar, where if you had Braid-style controls, that Braid-style looseness in a shmup, and some games do, and I don't like playing those games very much, especially games that are like ports from old joystick, like old arcade cabinets. Like, I've Raiden 3... And it doesn't play well on modern controllers because it is a little too loose. There's a little too much throw. You never quite feel like you are where you want to be.
It didn't scale well.
It doesn't scale well to modern, which is fine. It's a 15-year-old game, and I know where there's an arcade cabinet that has that game on it. So I'll just go there and set the high scores again, and it'll be great. But yeah, so for me, I think the one thing in Jamestown, I always feel like the left right is a little bit slower than the up than the forward back, and I would like them to be.
Yeah.
It feels like they designed it for a square play field, and nowadays everything's widescreen.
Yeah.
I feel like that's exactly the problem. Is they designed it at a time when 4:3 was more common, and now everything's 16:9 and 16:10.
Yeah, that's true, and I think also with the verticality, like if you think about like Touhou, I mean it's a very narrow bar across in a very
Yes, there's a lot of side screen. Also, something that I found really fascinating playing Jamestown again recently is that game actually feels quite a bit like the cave game Mushihime-sama or Bug Princess, which you can actually get for your iPad, which is a really weird way to play that game. I do not do very... It's really hard to play shmups on an iPad, but... For $4... Worth seeing because it's pretty, but if you really like shmups,
mechanics aside, so we're gonna set that aside because we've established that the mechanics do need improvement, and so that would definitely.
I just feel like we're a mechanics podcast, so I want to get that out of the way first.
Well, yeah,
we're a mechanics oriented podcast, let's say.
No, we're not. We're a pitch podcast.
Mechanics
are important. They're an integral part.
Yeah, I meant as opposed to we are gameplay oriented as opposed to game business oriented. Let's go with that.
Okay, absolutely.
Yes.
So, like one of the other things that I thought was great about Jamestown was this really unique story that was being told. It was a mashup between the story of Roanoke, the American settlement back in the 1800s?
Well, of Jamestown, so 1760s.
1760s, okay. So, yeah, I don't know my history that well. But it was a mashup of that and, like...
Or, sorry, 1660s.
Yeah, it was a mashup of that and, like, Mars Colony. So it was, like, future colony...
Oh, what is it? Was it Pocahontas or Last of the Mohicans? It was a retelling of, I think it was Last of the Mohicans.
But on a
steampunk Mars.
So like there was a lot about it that was kind of cool. The graphics were neat. The styling was cool. But I kind of felt like they could have done more more to expand on the story, more to expand on the world. It's kind of a weird thing to say because there was a ton of neat stuff. The environments that you were traveling through had some cool stuff, and there were like between each mission, when you could defeat the boss of the mission area, you would be engaged in a short like cutscene describing what happened next. And it seemed a little disjointed, and it didn't seem to tie... I mean, it's almost like you were playing a game and watching a story alternately, and they didn't always seem to meet up. I mean, towards the end, it kind of did. There were some parts in there that were amusing, but...
I'm sorry. I was trying to see really quickly if I could find the book, but I can't find the major plot points. I do remember it being based on a book, though.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. But, you know... So I think if they were to do a sequel, they should really do more narratively to tie the cutscenes in with the story. Like as an example, I Toho, from what I've played, there's always little cinematics like in as you progress that kind of give you more of an impression of what's going on. And I think
that many of those bosses come just as out of nowhere as some of the bosses in in fact, more out of nowhere than some of the bosses in Jamestown.
Well, I know. I'm using that as an example.
Sure, sure.
Because like in Jamestown, you like go through the entire mission area without any idea of story wise except for like what you're shooting at.
Sure.
And then you defeat the boss, and then there'd be like some story based on that. But like.
That's kind of a hallmark of the genre.
Yeah, it does.
It's a lot like arcade game Fighters.
Yeah, Toho, I did a better job of like as you progress.
Yeah.
Being interrupted by short little conversation segments.
Though I don't actually like playing this game all that much, but I think a game that actually does a really good job of integrating that and is a really interesting, if very, very dark story is Cinemora, S-I-N-E-M-O-R-A, Cinemora, which is about time rewinding and going back in time, and is a really dark and messed up story. But they do a really good job of integrating the characters, integrating the plots, integrating the bosses, and having cutscenes in between and during the gameplay, as well as before and after each mission. And I think that's one of the things that you really could, that a lot of games could learn from, except unfortunately it was in a shmup that in and of itself wasn't that great, so I don't think a lot of people paid that much attention to it, sadly.
Mm.
But yeah, they did a really good job of that sort of integration. But I mean, I guess my question is, where would you go from here? Because they blew up the colony. Spoiler alert, they blew up the Martian colony.
Well, there's more than enough planets in the solar system. So there's I don't know, they could try to integrate another scenario, the Battle of Alamo, and you could do that on Saturn or something weird like that. You know, that'd be an interesting story arc. Doing the Alamo on Saturn.
See, I feel like if you're going to do it, you should do one of two things. You should either do the what's that colony in Virginia? The Lost Colony there. I can't remember the name of it. But you know what I'm talking about, where like the whole colony just vanished overnight, and I think it was taken away by the Indians. But that was in Jamestown. It was very near, or it was in Virginia, very near Jamestown.
No, I don't know. You're not talking about Roanoke, are you?
Maybe I'm talking about Roanoke. Lost colony in...
I thought Roanoke was the colony.
Oh, yeah, Roanoke colony, yeah. Maybe that is... Okay, maybe that is what that was based on then. Yeah, okay, maybe that is what that game was based on then, was the sort of Roanoke. I thought it was based on something else.
So, so you wanted to base the next sequel of Jamestown on
I still thought Jamestown was more about like Pocahontas or Last of the Mohicans, where
I don't think so.
I really thought it was. But anyway, I haven't played that game in too long, so this is, I feel unprepared here. But
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Well, no, or the alternative is you do a three-part game, because everybody loves trilogies in video games.
Oh, yeah.
Is a three-part game based on the Revolutionary War, because you could do North, Middle, and South.
Huh.
Because the third one obviously would take place in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Or Virginia. Or actually, you could do one in Virginia. You could do one at, like, Lexington, Concord, Boston, and maybe Ticonderoga, maybe a little too far north. You know, so you basically do one following George Washington, one following Paul Revere, and one following, I'm forgetting my southern...
Don't ask me.
Cornwall.
I'm horrible with
this. One following General Cornwall.
Oh, that sounds like an interesting idea. And so, yeah, it'd be like a three-parter.
Yeah, and it's perfect because it takes place on Mars, which was a British colony in the game. So Mars, you know, so if Mars is basically the modern future America, mm-hmm. You know, having it follow the course of the Revolutionary War would be interesting.
Yeah.
You know, you could do the burning of Atlanta. It would be a great set piece for the final boss encounter.
Yeah.
You know, you do Paul Revere's ride would be a great first mission because it's going to be fairly quiet. There's not going to be a whole lot going on.
Oh, but who rides gigantic cyber chickens?
Well, no, he rides a giant fast-paced ship. You know, the first game you're flying this little tiny ship that's super fast. The second game you're flying like a big tanker, and the third game you're flying like this giant monster ship that's just like boo-doo, boo-doo.
A flying fortress.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, all right. That's,
you know, because Paul Revere would be riding a fast ship.
Well, would they all have giant hitboxes? I mean, small hitboxes?
Well, I think rather than distinguishing it by the size of the hitbox, you distinguish it by how the ship moves.
Mm.
Or actually, what you do is the first game you only have Paul Revere, the second game you have Paul Revere or Washington, the third game you have Paul Revere, Washington, okay, or Cornwall.
So that actually leads me to the next thing. It's more of a mechanics thing, you'll be happy to hear. I thought one thing that could really use improvement in that is the variety and the abilities of the vehicles that you choose. Because there was four.
There was four.
In Jamestown. And there were, of those four, two that were useful at all.
Sorry, Cornwallis, not Cornwall. I knew I was doing something wrong.
Cornwallis? Okay. So, in that regard, I think we could use with some more, not as interesting, but more effective
setups. No, wait, that's the wrong thing. Whatever. Anyway. You guys knew what I mean.
You had the main one, which just had like a rapid fire front facing cannon, and that was okay. And I think it had like a tracking beam weapon of some sort as its vaunt or something weird like that. The second one, I believe, was like a it was really weird because the
no, that was Civil War. Never mind. I'm getting everything all mixed up. I apologize. I'm Googling over here. Sorry,
you're Googling and you're getting yourself distracted. Anyway, so So the first vehicle was like a rapid fire.
There was laser. There was,
yes, that's right. It fired a straight laser beam. That was nice. There was the chain gun, but that one was really annoying because the more powerful weapon was useless.
Yeah.
Because you could never aim it, and I was always flying into stuff just trying to get the gun pointed in the right direction. So yeah.
There was the ball.
Totally out. The ball was awesome.
I really was bad with that one.
That one was really cool.
I actually prefer the chain gun to the ball. And then there was the, like, was it like, it was like a, either a stutter fire or a...
The fourth one was kind of weird. It would have been effective, but I could never figure out how to get it to do anything.
I don't remember what it was. Was it a stutter fire or was it like a wave beam or something?
There was a wave beam version. I think that was actually the third one, which wasn't too bad, But it seemed like the laser was far more effective.
I'm sure. Well, I think one of them was, like, homing.
Oh, yeah, no, that's what the third one was. Yeah. It was, okay, so, yeah, that's what it was. So, the first one was the laser. It had a rapid-fire cannon with a big laser beam. The second one was the wave gun, and it was pointable.
Right.
And then the third one was missiles at home.
Right. And yeah, the pointable one is always weird. They have them in a lot of games, and I'm always bad with those.
It would have been better if there was a twin stick control for that, because it wasn't. It was like how you position the ship.
Right, which is how a lot of those work. And those ones are very specifically made for people who have a lot of the game memorized. So they know, okay, seven ships are going to come in from the left. Seven ships are going to come in from the right. So go to the right side of the screen so it's pointing left. Go to the left side of the screen pointing right. Go down to the center. You know, it's for people who already kind of have that game memorized.
I ain't got time for that!
No, I know.
So it's honestly, in my opinion, it's a horrible
That game is always for people who are advanced at that game. That is for people who play that game a lot.
Yeah. So I'd love to see more.
Yeah.
So maybe
or not so much more as different.
Different, effective, more refined. I think there could have been some refinement to those vehicles, and maybe like if you're doing that trilogy, you could have four new ones for each of the trilogies based on the classification of the ship that you wanted, because you wanted like the little fast guys and then the medium and then the super. So each time you would get to the next part of the trilogy, you would have something more powerful and crazy and cool.
Right.
To move up to. So that's something important.
That's kind of important, yeah. And the interesting thing is if you did it that way, you could also lock the weapon type to the character. So, you know, each time you have a specific ship, which is how a lot of these games do it, is you have a ship and then you pick a weapon or one of two weapons. Like, either the person is tied to the weapon or the person is tied to one of two weapons or something. So, like, they each have a style of play. That's but, like, true. It would also be nice to have, you know, like, either. And again, like, to some extent, I'm not sure how you would quite do this, but, you know, maybe the ship, one of the ships moves slightly slower, but it hits a little harder, or it moves slightly slower, but it actually is. You could take two hits instead of one hit. I'm not sure if that would be a worthwhile trade-off, but yes, I think there are things that you could do to make some of the to make shmups in general more a little more varied, and also just to make. I mean, I feel like that for me, that game that was one of the things about that game is like, and it's ironic to say this because when I play Toho, I always play as the same character with the same attack, but for some reason that game just never quite felt the ships didn't feel different enough between them.
In Toho or
in, no, in Jamestown.
They were not as varietal as in Toho. That's definitely true.
But I mean, even just between the, I don't know. I don't know what it was about that the ships in that one, but they always just felt
too similar.
Yeah, which is weird because, like I said, I always play the exact same character in Toho.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, it was they all kind of fall into the same category.
No, you know what it is? It's not that they all felt too similar, it's that none of them quite felt right.
No, I suppose there was always like you always whenever you played one of them, you always felt like they could have done it a little bit better.
Yeah.
It would have been a little more effective.
Although I will say on the flip side, one of the things that I do really like about that game is the fact that you have like two levels of power ups. So and this is definitely, like I said, a lot of the game looks and even some of the enemy layouts feel very, very pulled from Cave games like Mushikimesama and the other one, and even this double tiered attack system feels very much pulled from that, which is more inspired by that. I'm not going to accuse them of stealing things, but really inspired by it. Where if you collect a certain amount of power ups, you can basically do a more powerful weapon. So you
the
have
vaunting, right?
The vaunting thing, yeah. So you have the one tier where you have the basic attack, and then you have the power attack, your bomb attack, or whatever you want to call it. And then you have a second tier where you vaunt, in which case you're invincible for a few seconds, you wipe out all the bullets on the screen, it's basically a bomb, and then you also have a more powerful attack for a few seconds.
You don't actually wipe the bullets off the screen.
Or the bullets that hit you get wiped off or something.
Yeah, it puts a sphere around you, like a ring, and it's about like four times the size of your ship.
Yeah.
And anything that hits that is destroyed or absorbed.
Yeah.
So it is like, it is invulnerability for a period of time. And it is kind of necessary, especially in the later game, to time out your vaunts. So yeah, whenever you destroy something, the things that you destroy drop gears, which you absorb those gears to build up your meter, and then you vaunt, and then you're invincible. And you have to keep building up because as it goes, your meter goes down, but if you keep collecting things, you can maintain your vaunt up until its maximum time.
That may actually be the reason that I had so much difficulty with that game, is I'm used to games where you never want to trigger your bombs and you don't actually want to hit anything.
It is different, because in Toho, as the example we constantly go back to, because it is like our biggest shmup favorite game thing. It is. You don't, because you gain points when you complete a match by how many bombs you have left over.
And also because bombs are like emergencies only.
Yeah.
But even like Raiden or even like Ikaruga is a weird one, but even in Ikaruga, like, you are trying to collect certain things, but you're trying, you know, you like it, using bombs.
Ikaruga uses a completely different mechanic, in that it uses a polarity system where essentially bullets are either black or white, and you're either black or white, and you can flip. And when you're black, you can absorb black bullets, but you'll be damaged by white bullets, and vice versa.
And you do double damage to people of the opposite polarity.
Exactly. Yep. So it's constantly switching back and forth and knowing what you should be in a current situation.
Yeah, I think James Ted does it really well. It's just counter to my instincts, which maybe why I had such trouble with it.
It's a new one, and it's designed kind of to make you think. So I guess the question is would we want to see more of the Vaunt, or would we want them to innovate a new system, and what would that be?
I mean, I feel like asking somebody to innovate a shmup system off the top of their head is
maybe... this is a pitch podcast, pal.
I know.
That's what we're here for.
I'm just saying, I feel like if that was possible, people would have done it by now.
Well, they did with I mean, it's probably not the only place that it's ever been done, but it's done pretty well.
No. I think it's good. It's also, that was not made up whole cloth. They took inspiration from other places and refined it. That is not a brand new concept by any means.
No, of course not.
You know what? I think if you're going to have it, so if you're going to base it on the Revolutionary War,
right?
You don't make it about the North. You don't make it about. You don't quite follow that timeline, because I was wrong. Burning of Atlanta was Civil War. I knew I had gotten that mixed up, which is Sheridan, not... anyway, whatever. Or Jackson. Anyway, whatever. The Burning of Atlanta was what I was thinking of, but they also burned houses down in the Revolution. But there was also the Indians were also involved in that. So if you want to link it from Jamestown to the Revolutionary War, you should add in the Indian faction.
Mm-hmm. If I'm right that Roanoke, the story of Roanoke and its disappearance is part of what Jamestown is.
And the main character is an Indian, was an Indian.
Possibly. I'm not sure about that. But the aliens are representing the Indians.
That's what I mean. But also the main character was also an Indian, which is...
If you actually follow some of the storyline for Jamestown, it's so convoluted. It's like they took the idea of Roanoke, they added the futuristic thing, and that was weird enough, and then they twisted it.
Well, that's why I always thought it was the Last of the Mohicans, because he was supposed to be the quote-unquote good Indian.
No, I don't think that was the case in that.
But
because he was actually in that, he was an American who was imprisoned.
Okay.
And he was, like, released or something.
Maybe that's what it was.
Some nonsense.
Anyway.
Like that.
If you added in the second fact, so if you had it aliens, so if it's the Revolutionary War, it would be the aliens and the British. So if you had it so that you had to collect, like, keep a balance between these two things, and that if you started going more alien, you got one kind of attack, and if you started going more, more British, you started getting this other kind of attack.
So it would be, like, depending on how you handle missions, or...
No, based on, like, pickups. So... Oh,
okay. All right, so... Okay, I see what you're saying there. So, like, you'd have blue and green.
Yeah, you'd have, like, blue and green. Or red, probably, because red coats.
Oh, yeah, good point. Red and green, and it'd be, like, Christmas.
So, if you got a lot of red, you'd start having one kind of... I'm not going to bring it up, because I'm not going to bring up Toho again, but...
You're cut off from Toho.
No, seriously. So if you started going towards one direction, maybe you would have more of a, like the British were, you know, the Redcoats were all about front-on attack, full-on attack, broad rank and file, and then just very strong shows of force. So it would be maybe a large screen-clearing thing, whereas maybe if you were...
You know what?
If you caught Indian stuff, you'd be able to disappear for 5 seconds.
A row of British ships, right? They pull up, they line up behind you, they sit for a bit, then maybe a couple of them get destroyed because it's like that whole idea of like the military line. And then they just fire like a volley of free bullets or something like that straight up the screen.
Yep.
And it clears would clear everything that does when the ships that don't get destroyed. Yep. So like if you're in a heavy situation, it might not be as effective.
Right.
And the more advanced you get along on that line, the more ships and the more durable they are and stuff.
Or even better, the closer you get to the front of the screen, the more likely they are to survive. So that plays with that risk-reward. Because a lot of shmups like to encourage you to stay towards the... like, because it's really safe to stay at the... safer to stay at the bottom of the screen. So a lot of them like to encourage you to go up the screen a little bit by either giving you more points or letting you collect items or something. So if the further you go up before you use the bomb, the more likely they are to survive and or you get additional files for each, say, quarter of an inch up the screen you are.
And you know what would be even cooler is to follow in that same vein. You get the aliens, a whole bunch of UFOs randomly pop in and they do like a guerrilla warfare attack where they pop in and they attack something and they disappear.
And you disappear for 5 seconds after they leave so that you're invincible for a few seconds. So the British clears the entire screen and then the aliens clear part of the screen, but then you're invisible and can still hit them.
Yeah.
For like 5 seconds.
No, I like that. That's a cool idea.
There you go.
So there we go. So our pitch is going to be Jamestown,
two through four,
Civil War.
Revolutionary War.
Revolutionary War. Okay, so let's try this again.
Well, technically, you could call it the British Civil War.
Okay, so it'd be Jamestown, two, British Revolutionary War. The Revolutionary War, we'll call it.
It's the American Revolution or the British Civil War.
Hey, you know, that's actually a great idea, and you could have the credits change depending on what your affinity is by the time you finish the game.
Well,
or just when you finish each level.
I should point out that if this is the Revolutionary War, technically you're trying to secede from both of those. Like, those are technically both bad guys in the game.
Well, yeah.
Because you're an American.
Okay. Yeah, so that works.
So it gets really weird if you win and you're like, British colony!
Well, we'll put that out there right now. I think there was a lot of that.
If you want to be really, really controversial and get a lot of sales as well, you make Paul Revere a British sympathizer, and secretly he's working to undermine the entire American Civil or the American Revolutionary War.
Yeah, that's probably going to get somebody shivved.
Not me.
I don't know, man. Anyway, so that's that. So to sum up, our pitch is to create a game based on the Revolutionary War where the power-ups that you collect affect what affinity you have either for the British or for the natives. We'll just say like the being on Mars, the natives would actually be aliens. That would affect your bomb. It probably would even affect your weapon systems.
Yeah.
And on top of that, will probably even affect the storyline in some small ways.
Yeah, that would be fun.
We also would want to see more story-related cutscenes, more like little conversation pieces as the story progresses so that you have a firmer understanding of what on Earth is happening right now.
Actually, if you want to make it really interesting, if you go further down the Indians or the native side, you get people like Lafayette and the French Resistance or the French showing up. And if you go to more down the British side, you get to deal with people like Ben Franklin and Samuel Adams.
Okay, yeah, because so I could usually be right now. And, on top of that, we would like to see some more tightened up controls. That's a given, obviously. And I think that would make for a good sequel.
Yeah, I think that would work.
Okay, great. So that's it for the spitball. And let's see what we've got going on here. And...
for the mouthwash.
And welcome back to the Mouthwash, where we spit fiery hot truths like arrows from the bow of Lady Justice herself, along with just a hint of minty freshness. So, today on the Mouthwash, we're going to talk about something that's very near and dear to my heart. I think it's a little less near and dear to Luke's heart, but that's because it made Luke cry last year. So this year, hopefully, it will make him cry less.
No, I'm hoping so.
No, so I am the organizer slash instigator of the Perfect Charity Blossom donation drive, which we talked a little bit about at the open of the show to sort of give you an explanation of why we were even doing this. But I want to talk a little bit more about both Perfect Charity Blossom as a whole, the concept, why I'm doing it, and also, you know, a little bit about the Toho series, which is the games that I play. Luke plays a lot of Jamestown, a little bit of Toho. I primarily play Toho during that series. So, like I said at the beginning of the show, I used to be a big fan of the Drunken Gamers podcast, and every month in March they had Shmup Appreciation, which was a celebration of all things shmups. They were actually big fans of the Darius games, and I think they were big fans of the cave games, Mushihime-sama, Bug Princess, Gwaranga, Death Smiles, and a couple of other, not Gwaranga, something like that. Shoot, I'm drawing a blank on all of the other games, but they had several really good games. Dodonpachi, that's the one. Dodonpachi and Dodonpachi Resurrection. All of which are very good games. Death Smiles is a little weird, but otherwise, fun games, very colorful, very pretty. Somewhat different in style and gameplay to the Toho series, but they were big fans of those. And unfortunately, Hilden passed away several years ago, and the podcast switched. They are now the Super the Hardest podcast. But so sort of partially in memory of Shmup Appreciation and in tribute to Aaron Helden, and also I should point out that they also did the amazing Shmopera, which you can still find, and actually goes to Aaron or to Hilden's children's college scholarships. So if you are interested in throwing his family a little bit of money and getting a really good album, go check that out. It's $10. It's really, really fun. I listen to it every year around March. It's a great album. So that's all fun stuff. So it was partially out of my desire to be able to have an excuse to listen to that, and partially out of my inability to join in the Extra Life, the 2015 Extra Life Challenge, which is a 24-hour gaming marathon. I decided to create what I'm calling the 5K of video game charity fundraising, the Perfect Charity Blossom, which instead of doing one game or playing one day for 24 hours straight, you play every day for an hour or so for a month. So rather than turning it into an ongoing sport, it's more of an endurance marathon to see whether you can last the full month. And the money goes to the Child's Play charity, which provides books, toys, video games, and other things to children in hospitals. And when I was a teenager, I was in the hospital for many, many months with cancer. And so the video games and toys and books that the hospitals that I was in were donated meant a lot to me. And I had friends who brought me video games and toys, including Luke, who is sitting there very quietly and respectfully, which I appreciate.
It's taking so much self-control right now.
Well, you're welcome to chip in and assist me.
I think you're doing fantastic.
Okay. Who's sitting there very respectfully, and I appreciate that. But, you know, so that meant a lot to me. And so I liked to be able to give back. And I feel like that's one of the charities that I feel is doing direct good. So I feel like it's a good one to give to. And unfortunately, Make-A-Wish they've gotten better, but at the time, they don't like sponsoring people. They don't want people playing video games to sponsor them. So, because they feel that it demeans their purpose. So I went with Child's Play, which is very much video game supportive because it was created by the Penny Arcade guys.
Yep.
So, yeah. So basically it's, and if you're interested in either helping out or donating or just watching, you can check us out over at neoncheetahs.com/PCB, as in Perfect Charity Blossom. And we will have, I'm hoping to have links to the Twitch pages of everybody who's participating, along with hopefully video, you know, their streams as they're happening, as well as a donation link, and you know, a little bit more about sort of why I'm doing this and what Perfect Charity Blossom is all about. But basically, it's about people punishing themselves through playing shmups for your enjoyment, and then you hopefully saying, you know, you guys are beating yourself up, Well, I'll throw a little bit of money out of appreciation for you and, in, you know, and to help out the kids, because it's all about the kids.
Fantastic.
And that's that. So, now that we've discussed sort of Perfect Charity Blossom, I wanted to talk a little bit about Toho, which is a game that has been near and dear to my heart for many, many years, and is a game that, after a decade of prompting, I finally got you to check out, and you kind of liked.
Yeah, it was, funnily enough, I did get into it, and I did enjoy it. I started out doing the Perfect Charity Blossom, which I didn't fully commit to, because I can't do every single day, unfortunately. My schedule doesn't allow it. But I did go on as much as I can. I think I managed about four times a week. And I played through... I started off with Jamestown, because that was actually a game I had at the time that was a shmup. And I enjoyed that far more than I thought. And so I thought, you know, I enjoyed Jamestown far more than I expected. So I gave Toho a try, and I think you gave me 15?
Toho 15, which actually does a lot different from the other games in the series, but we'll get to that in a little bit. But yeah, Toho 15 is Legacy of Lunatic Kingdom.
Yeah. And I'm going to say right now that is the weird... Like, in the beginning of this podcast, we discussed Jamestown and just how warped... well, we talked a little bit about
how weird the story is.
Yeah, the story's very weird. It's got nothing on Toho. It's got nothing on must be like a shmup thing that they're just like being weird.
A, it's a shmup thing, but B, it's a Japanese thing.
That's true.
Here's how I like to... So... I've talked before, I watch a lot of anime, Luke watches some anime. The way I explain Toho is, here's how you will understand if you appreciate the cultural sense of humor in Toho. Toho 8, Imperishable Knight, or in Japanese, Eisho, is the main boss is the Princess of the Moon. Her name is Kaguya. If you understand why her name is Kaguya, you will probably understand some of the plot of this game. Also, all of her minions are rabbits, because they live on the moon. Now, if you get why that's hilarious, you will understand the cultural references in these games. If that doesn't make sense to you, why that's a really good joke, it's probably going to fly over your head. That doesn't mean you shouldn't play the game, it just means you won't follow the plot.
I'm
going
to point out right now that all of that flies over my head. Way over my head. Don't understand a bit of it, but I still enjoyed the game.
I will say, the games are... You don't play Toho for the plot. You know, it is not Uncharted.
I still have absolutely no idea why this cute little girl in a maid... Was it a maid's outfit?
Miko? Yes.
Oh, isn't it like a shrine temple?
Yeah, she's a shrine maiden.
Yeah. Okay, so I didn't know why this cute young shrine maiden was flying through the air, shooting something from her fingertips, and fighting off flying fairies, I guess, and other stuff.
And rabbits.
And rabbits.
With lasers.
Laser rabbits. Ooh, that's a good idea for a pitch someday.
laser rabbits.
But...
Everything's better with laser rabbits.
It was still very entertaining, and the gameplay was very solid. So I did enjoy it, and I will be looking forward to playing more of that.
Also, I should point out that one of the bosses of the game that Luke played is a fairy wearing an American flag who throws moons at you.
Oh, that's Clown Piece. Yes. You introduced me to Clown Piece, and that...
And the best band name in the world, Rage Against the Clown Piece.
Oh, yes.
Yes, that video game was not only the one of the games that we played during Perfect Charity Blossom, it also led to me creating a board game, and it also led to...
Well, that's not a board game, it's a card game.
Sorry, card game.
You don't
party
have a
game.
Board.
Party game, tabletop. Tabletop game.
Does tabletop that make you card game. Okay. You use the word board again. And...
But I will also say that one of the, the irony of the whole thing was I started Perfect... I didn't start it, but one of the reasons I did this thing was to give me an excuse to finally beat Mountain of Faith, Toho 10.
Did you actually complete that?
Joshinroku in or Joshinroku
in.
You did
like
Japanese.
Halfway through the
three episodes in. I finally.
That's right.
After
I remember
eight
that now.
Years. Beat that stupid
That's
game.
That's great. Yeah, this is the wonderful thing, because he planned, like, he's like, I got a whole month to beat it. I think I can do it. It will be no... I should be able
I
to manage
finally
it
will be
after
able to do
30
it.
Days of nonstop play. 3 days in, he beats it, and then he's completely lost as to what to do next.
Yeah, like seriously, that game came out 3 weeks before the recession in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
I bought it 2 weeks after it came out. I have been playing it off and on for the last 7 years, and I had never beaten the final boss. 3 days into playing it, I finally beat the final boss on Twitch. After assuming that I was never going to beat that game, I had no idea what to do at that point. It was the happiest and sad. It was one of the happiest and saddest at the same time moments of my life.
I can understand that. Now, okay, so my question for you, I'm going to be doing a lot of questions because I really don't have much about this game. I played 15, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
So is that 15 the last one, or have they made more sense?
I actually haven't kept too much track. I believe 15 is the last of the shmups. I think they may have put out a fighting game sometime in the last year. Yeah.
That's interesting.
They put out three of those. One was called Scarlet Weather Rhapsody, and I forget what the other one was called.
Okay. Excuse me. So,
I actually think this one is only for the PS4.
Which one is your favorite? Okay, so out of the 15 that you're familiar with, how many have you played?
Okay, well, the first five you can't play anymore. They were all made for the PC-98 console/computer, which I believe... I've actually never been able to confirm this, but I believe is basically the follow-up to what we know in America as the TurboGrafx.
So like that's that super ultra-rare computer that you need to be able to calculate time stuff and
I don't know. What are you talking about?
I'm referencing Steins Gate.
Oh, okay. actually, that it probably is that because they were fairly rare. But like in America, we got the PC Duo, which is the TurboGrafx, or the TurboGrafx Duo was the PC Duo, PC2 Duo. So I believe the PC-98 was the sequel to the TurboGrafx Duo, but it was never released in America. It's fairly rare, and I'm not 100% sure that that's the lineage, but everything I've read leads me to believe that is the lineage. So maybe I should check in on somebody with somebody who actually knows more about that than I do.
Yeah.
But so those games, they've attempted to emulate them for the PC, but they aren't, like the first one isn't even a shmup.
No.
It's not even a shmup. It's a weird sort of like bouncing a ball thing.
It's like that block breaker.
Sort of.
Yeah.
It's real weird. And the other four are not shmups in the same way. I've seen a little bit of gameplay. They're more like say your Galagas, your R-types. They're more slower. They're not bullet hells. They're more just traditional shmups.
They're very old, unrefined.
Yes.
From the late 90s, I would assume.
I think late 90s, early 2000s.
Okay.
So episodes, six I have played a little bit, which is, I forget what the E is. It's Elements of Scarlet Devil, something like that. Which is about the Scarlet family, Flandre and Romilia, which is where fan favorite Patchouli Knowledge comes from, and where fan favorite Cerno comes from, who is the stupid fairy who can't count, also known as Nineball to fans. Oh, I should point out here that something beyond Toho as a game is very popular. Toho as a fan thing, or excuse me, technically it's the Toho Project is technically the official name, because Toho just I believe just means Eastern.
If you've ever like gone to a convention,
yes,
or done anything like anything where you've come across fans of any series. Oh, like as a great example, Doctor Who.
Yes.
Have you ever come across people who are seriously crazy Doctor Who fans, and you're like, what is wrong with these people? And like,
Toho is
it
a
boggles,
whole other
level. Yeah, and it boggles the mind. There is nothing to prepare you with the insane nonsense that is a Toho fan.
Let's discuss some of the things that Toho fans have created. Okay. They've created three fan sponsored and fan written and fan drawn animes.
Wow.
They created an entire set of mods for GTA 4 that San Andreas, which actually made the game go from the least selling Grand Theft Auto game in Japan to the most sold Grand Theft Auto game in Japan because of those mods.
Of course.
They have created a 10 hours of fake animated stand-up comedy.
Oh, yeah, you've been trying to get me to listen to
those.
I love
those. Those are really fun. Hundreds of hours of music videos based on the songs from the game with people singing over them, dancing over them, drawing over them. The best one and the most famous one, which is a really good video to watch, is Bad Apple. Check that one out. It's a really amazing silhouette music video. It's really beautiful. And if you go on any on your image website of choice, you know, your Imgurs, your Danburus, your 4chans, whatever you like, you will find hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of fan-drawn art, fan art and fan comics and all sorts of memes.
Fair disclaimer there. If you do anything like that, especially with I don't want to sound stereotypical, but like Japanese fan art, stuff like that, it's not always censored, so
be careful. Be aware that there's definitely some stuff that is not safe for work, and there's also some stuff that is just absolutely insane and weird and kind of goofy. So just, yeah. Fandom
comes in every way, and yes. This is extreme fandom to its extreme, so yes. You can find everything.
There is some great stuff, there is some weird stuff, there is some awful stuff, but there's a lot of stuff that's out there that's really cool. And their community is really friendly and very nice. So I will say that about that. But yeah, so yeah, as far as that goes, there is all sorts of... It has a very rabid fan base, and it also has a very prolific fan base, and they like to do a lot of drawing. And, you know, and 80% of the characterization in this game, that's what I was talking about with Cernow, you know, so much of the characterization is fan created. It's people saying, oh, well, she said this once, you know, because most of the characters in these games have two, maybe three lines in the entire game. Maybe 10 for the more popular characters. So, you know, it's her taking her saying, I are the strongest in one of the games, and blowing that out into her entire character. Or one of the characters in one of the games said, I'm 17.36147 times stronger than you are, and blowing that out into 30% of her character. You know, just that's, you know, so much of this stuff is based on one or two sentences, one drawing, whatever, and entire fan communities, fan canon has sprung up around these characters in really weird and fascinating ways. It's... Somebody someday will do an anthropological study of Toho fans, and I will be fascinated to read that paper. But in the meantime...
Or horrified. Horrified is an option.
So six, I'm not a huge fan of. It doesn't play the same as the later games do. It's much more... It's reactive in a really weird way, whereas all the other games have a very sort of preset attacks. Six sort of... You know, we talked a couple weeks ago about difficulty. It reacts to you in a really weird way, and sometimes it... like, the better you do, the different patterns come out, and, you know, it targets you a lot more than the later games do. Where the later games are much more about set patterns. So, like, and some of them will target you, but if you know where they're going to, you know where they're going to come from, and you can sort of plan for that. And there's a little more memorization involved, whereas six is much more reactive. Seven is Perfect Cherry Blossom, which is where I got the name for the...
Perfect Charity Blossom.
Right, which is where I got the name for the thing from. It's a parody of that. I really like that one. I think that may be my favorite... I don't know, I say that about every single game. I think that may be my favorite music in the game.
Right.
Of all of the games is six.
Oh, that's something I don't think...
Or that, seven, sorry.
I don't think that Josh has mentioned that the music in the game is actually very good.
The music in this... And that whole series is amazing. And there are literally thousands of fan covers of it in all sorts of genres because it is so good. That's right. That was the other thing I meant to talk about with the community is, people have done tons of covers of those songs, and they are all...
I think you did mention it. You just didn't say that.
Many of them are very good. And the music is beautiful. Necrophantasia being one of the great ones from 7, or I'm drawing a blank. Phantom Ensemble is really good. There's a lot of really good tracks. 7 actually has one of my favorite moments of all of... has my favorite moment of all of the games, where when you are going into the fifth stage, and I'm almost hesitant to spoil it, but the game's 14 years old at this point, so I guess I can get away with it.
Spoiler warning.
One of the stage 5 boss's attacks is called, like, Lake of Ice or something, and she jumps down to the bottom of the screen, draws a slash across the bottom with her sword, and then attacks start coming up from the icicles start coming up from the bottom while cherry petals start falling on you from the ceiling. And you have to dodge both of them at the same time.
Wow, that sounds impressive.
And it's really cool. It's one of the most shocking moments in that game because things very rarely attack you from the bottom of the screen. Everything always goes down.
Well, it's a good use of finding a mechanic and saving it for just the right
time. Yeah, it's a shocking moment. It, like, literally, the first time I saw that, I was like, whoa, what? That's not allowed? And yeah, it's really cool. The final boss, that was the first, that was the second game that I beat because it's the one of the two that allows you to actually continue. And I have finally gotten the good ending of that, which means you can't actually use a continue. So I like that one. The final boss is not my favorite. She's really hard in a weird way. But I like that one. 8 is probably my favorite one to play. It's certainly the easiest one. Which is Imperishable Night, and there's a lot of stuff about time in there, and there's, like, one of the things you collect actually causes time to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
So the more of those you collect, the better your score is at the end.
Because time advances.
Correct. And also there's two bosses, so there's two final bosses. That one is a lot of really interesting things. It's a little bit easier. There's four basic kinds of Toho attacks. I call them, like, spheres, needles, shogi pieces, and, like, fans or arrows. I'm really good with balls and with with needles, which are, like, little straight pieces. Things that are, like, pointy, like arrows, like, not, like...
It's easy for you to predict where they're going.
I have a much harder time predicting with the fans and stuff, because they sort of go at an angle to the direction they're pointing, so I find it a lot harder to predict them.
They curve.
Yes. So 7 has a lot of fans, and so I have, so there are several balls. Like, the second boss of Perfect Cherry Blossom is harder for, or Perfect Cherry Blossom is harder for me than any other boss in that game. I die more on that boss than I do on any boss other than the final boss, because I just have so much trouble predicting her attacks. But 8 is primarily circles and needles, so that one's much easier. 9 is a head-to-head game, and it's really weird.
Mm-hmm.
10 is the one that I was doing badly at. Doesn't allow continues. But that one's real fun, and it does some really cool stuff. It's really pretty. It's a lot of good colors. The attacks are really varied. Like, you know, the previous games, the bosses all felt a little more samey. This one, the bosses feel very, very different. Right. 11 is really, really, really hard. I haven't played much of 12. And then I played a little bit of Double Dealing Character. I beat it once.
That 13?
13. I beat it on the first try. That was the only game I've beaten on the first try. That was way easier. Double Dealing Character might be 14, and 13 might be the one about 12 prayers or whatever. Either way, I played them each once. I liked Double Dealing Character, but found it fairly easy. I didn't like the one about the prayers or whatever. So, didn't play much of that one. And then 15 is the most recent and does some really cool stuff with... You can die as many times as you want in the main mode, but you have to restart from that wave.
Right.
Which they hadn't done before. Up until that point, up until that point, you had to get to the end with, like, 5 lives. But to counteract that, the boss patterns are way, way, way harder.
Yes, 15 is the one that I actually played. It's the only one I've played because I don't really have access to the other ones.
Yeah, the other ones are really hard to get a hold of, especially nowadays. You can actually pick most of them up on Amazon now for about $20, so that's way better than it used to be. It used to be like $100 or $60 to import them or something ridiculous.
Yeah, so my experience with 15 is, craziness mm-hmm. is the word I would use. The bosses are super hard. And I made it as far as the character that Josh mentioned, Clown Piece,
which is the fifth boss. So yeah. Respectable.
It's interesting, though, because there is a major difficulty mechanic in that a lot of the levels are pretty straightforward in getting through them until you hit the boss of that area. And then they get really, really hard. And I think the one just before Clown Piece was really hard. And then Clown Piece takes it to a whole nother level, and you are up to your eyeballs in moons.
Yeah, I think there was one of her attacks that I think I had to attempt it like 42 times before I finally got the timing exactly right.
So yeah, the part that I remember is probably the one you're talking about. You have, I think, a wavy bands, like a cross, like the cardinal direction that slowly rotates around the screen, and then there's a spiral of balls, I think.
Yeah.
And then there's one, maybe two moons. I think it's actually there's just one moon,
spinning,
orbiting.
Yeah.
The boss.
Counterclockwise from the giant fan.
And, okay, so the moon is blocking your shots, but it's also blocking her shots. So yeah. If you can get behind the moon, you're safe, but you can't hit her.
Right.
So, and you actually have to hit her to advance,
you
right?
You don't, actually, because there is a timer.
Oh, well,
so
that's the
other important thing is, so in some of the Doho games, you actually get more points if you let the timer run out, and in other games, you don't. You also lose points if you die. You also lose points if you use a bomb. And a lot of those games, there's weird multiplier stuff.
And
like eight is really interesting because you're playing as two characters at the same time, and depending on which character you're playing as, either you're trying to graze or you're trying to do damage to get score, which is a really interesting mechanic. But yeah, so there's a lot of that weird stuff of each game has different scoring mechanics, but you always lose stuff if you bomb, and that actually causes your bar to switch to the other side for real quick, and then you have to pull it all the way back to the other side if you want to do that. So yeah, it's a lot of weird stuff involving bombing and dying and death bombing.
So I'll put that out there right now. I think I'm going to try to get my hands on Ikaruga for this shmup thing.
I have a copy of Ikaruga. You should give that a try at some point if you haven't played it before.
And then depending on whether or not I give up on it or I make decent progress, I probably will play another Toho. As I mentioned 2 weeks ago, I had to wipe my computer.
So yes.
I'm going to have to reacquire a copy of Toho from you.
Yes, that's fine. I will say, Ikaruga is the hardest shmup I've ever played, bar none.
Sounds like fun. I'll give it a whack.
Like Legacy of the Lunatic Kingdom is hard, but I have beaten the final boss twice. I have not even beaten the second boss of Ikaruga.
Have you ever actually sat down and just to make mention of another charity drive? I believe it was AGDQ or
yes.
SGDQ. They did a tool assisted speedrun of Ikaruga.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's the
insane.
Craziest thing I have ever
seen.
Yeah,
that's what made me. I played it before, but that was what made me actually buy the Steam copy. which I will point out, Ikaruga is like, if you could get it on sale, Ikaruga is $5. It's not expensive.
It's actually a pretty game. It's one of those titles that it's tight.
Mm-hmm.
It's clean.
And it is hard as all get out.
Yes, actually, that's the funny thing about that, because it's hard, but it looks to me, and I haven't actually played it, but by seeing other people play, actually, I've played it once from a friend. I borrowed it for, like, the PlayStation 2, I think. Eli lent it to me.
Is it Dreamcast?
It might have been. I think, actually, I borrowed somebody's Dreamcast. And I played it there. It was the only time I could.
I don't think it came out for the PS2. But it came out for the GameCube and the Dreamcast.
I might have borrowed someone's GameCube copy of it. It had to be at some point like that. And it was very hard, but it looked good, and it played great.
It's beautiful. It is a beautiful game, and it is, it is made by the guys who made Radiant Silver Gun, and I think they also made Gunstar Heroes, both of which are highly acclaimed, and both of which are precise and very, very tight. And, I've talked before about my feeling about people hating the phrase, hating when people say, it feels like everything you do is your fault. But I have never felt like that game is cheating me in any way. I when I lose in that game, it is because I am just not good at that game.
Yeah.
That game makes you step it up.
That is a prime example of, and like, honestly, I would probably have like a handful of those games. So the next time somebody says, Dark Souls is the hardest game ever, hand them one of those and be like, okay, you play this and then we'll talk.
Yeah. Ikaruga is... I think Ikaruga is brutal.
It is one of those games where it's not like... I mean, it can be frustrating, but it's not like the type of hard that where you think that it's unfair.
No.
It's hard because it's hard, and you accept that and you keep playing it, or you don't.
That game expects you to give it your all. At all times. And I think we will talk more about this, in a couple weeks, because I know we were planning to talk a little more about Massacre games in general. But I think for me, now that I'm sure everybody's already tuned out because they're sick of hearing me just wax poetic about Toho for this whole time, but...
Yeah, just letting you know right now, this is you getting your Toho in.
I know.
You're banned from talking about it until next March.
I know. Probably not fully, but yes. No, I will try to keep it to a minimum. But no, I think, you know, people ask me, why would you play a game like that? Because it's brutal and you're banging your head against the wall. And, like, what is fun about this game that literally sometimes has reduced you to screaming in rage and pounding your head on the table and being so frustrated that your arms are shaking and you can't even stop? Like, why would you play a game that does that to you? And I think that's the reason, is because Toho, or any of these games, any of these shmups, they always expect you to give it your best. They expect your best from you at all times, and they always think that you are more capable than even you yourself sometimes think you are. And I think, you know, there's just something about that that it makes you want to be better, because you're like, you know, it's not like a Dark Souls or even a Civ or a Dota where it's like, I can see other people being better. It's like, no, I can see how I can be better if I just hadn't moved here.
Well, that's one of the big things about that game is I'm not like a good hand-eye coordination type of person, and my reflexes aren't fantastic. And I would not say that the shmup genre is something I'm good at.
Right.
However, I have never played the game more than once and not seen some sort of improvement.
Yeah.
So it is the type of game that encourages you to keep going, because you know if you keep going, you're going to get a little bit farther the next time around. Yep. And yeah, maybe you'll be so ticked off that you want to put your head through the wall, but you come back to it tomorrow with feeling fresh and calmed down,
yep,
and you'll make even more progress. And so eventually you'll get to the end of the game and you'll feel awesome for it. And the only way to really fail at one of these games is to give up and not play it again.
I feel like that right there perfectly sums up not only my feelings about shmups, but also even just my feelings about Perfect Charity Blossom and most of this stuff. Because, you know, I talked before, one of the reasons that I started Perfect Charity Blossom is to give back, because I was in the hospital with cancer. And I want to sort of give back and help out these kids who are in a similar position, maybe not with cancer, but with other diseases and in the hospital for a long period of time. And I think you've encapsulated both what is great about shmups and about what we can learn and bring back to our own lives, which is, you know, because, and I have said this before half in jest, but I think, you know, in a lot of ways, the best part about shmups is the things that they give you that are practical in real life, which is, A, focus on the things coming down the pike, but not too much. Focus on the problems right in front of you more, because each day is going to have enough of its own problems. And even if you fail today, tomorrow, come back with a fresh head, and you'll have a much better chance of success. So, you know, I'd like to think that each of you are going to do that, and I know that we're going to do that with each and every one of our future episodes. So, thank you, Luke. I think that was a really eloquent way of closing us out.
Woohoo!
If you have any questions, thoughts, or pitch ideas, please send them to us at spitball.sessions@gmail.com or spitballsessions@neoncheetahs.com. You can check out our writing and other articles at neoncheetahs.com. And if you would like to participate and or help us out with the Perfect Charity Blossom event, you can visit us there at neoncheetahs.com/PCB for Perfect Charity Blossom. If you want to follow us or watch us perform during Perfect Charity Blossom, you can follow me at twitch.tv/Kaholos, which is KHOLOS, or at Kaholos on YouTube, and I have all of last year's Perfect Charity Blossom archived there, and I will archive all of this year's as well. And you can follow Luke doing his Perfect Charity Blossom and other games over at twitch.tv/thedrelle, or THEDRELLE, or at thedrelle on YouTube. I'd like to thank our editor-in-chief and sound engineer Trevor for editing the podcast. I'd like to thank Luke for joining me. And I'd like to thank all of you at home for listening to another exciting Spitball Sessions. And may the charity and goodwill fall like cherry petals from the sky. Tune in next time. Till then, keep your feet in the batter's box and your eye on the ball, because we'll have another hot pitch coming your way.